Status Complicated, the podcast, is brought to you by Wingman VIP. Now, it's not a dating app. It's the hottest app on the market, providing mobile concierge services nationwide. With the press of a button, you can experience a VIP rock star lifestyle. VIP experiences from sightseeing to concerts to business networking are now available safely and stress-free, all at your fingertips. Now recruiting wingman nationwide, so visit wingmanvip.com, download the app, and sign up today.
I mean, look, it doesn't take a double-blind, placebo-controlled study to figure out what makes a marriage not work, right? Disrespect, boredom, too much time on Facebook, having sex with other people. But you can have the exact opposite of all of those things. Respect, excitement, a broken internet connection, mind-numbing monogamy, and the thing still can go to hell in a handbasket. So what's going on when it doesn't?
Hey people, welcome back to Status Complicated. This week I found a clip on TEDx and thought it was really interesting what makes a marriage work, what doesn't. And so we'll definitely have a link to it on our mi83network.com website for you to click on, listen to it, and then you can hear my guests and I talk about the key topics that she covers in this talk. Some of them are really wacky and some of them are just very practical and make sense. And of course, certain things would make a marriage work and wouldn't. But I just thought it would be interesting to kind of dive in and explore what does make a really good marriage. I have my husband, Mark, as my guest.
What's up, people? Happy to be back. Thanks for bringing me back.
Of course. I love having our husband and wife duo. This week, I wanted to talk about a TED Talk that actually was posted years ago, but I recently found it, and it's called Why You Don't Know What You Don't Know About Marriage. It's from a writer named Jenna McCarthy, and she does a very funny, interesting TED Talk, and it's more casual, and it's on TEDx.
Wait, Jenny McCarthy? The old Singled Out host?
Oh, she kind of looks like her, actually, but no, her name is Jenna. Not Jenny.
Jenna McCarthy.
Yeah, no. She's a writer, and she does this really casual, kind of funny talk about surprising research on happy marriages and what really works. And I know that we've been together for a long time, but we've actually only been married for over a year, so.
Right.
So we're not, like, the experts, but apparently.
Not the experts, but we've been together for, you know, a decade.
A decade, right.
So, I mean, but yeah, married for only a year, but we got some good insight on this stuff, I think.
I think so, too. And her stats aren't, I would say, the stats that you would really think of. They're kind of funny, off the wall a little bit. And
Where'd she get this stuff, though? Like,
she compiled it through a bunch of research, so it's not just coming from one source.
Okay, and well, then, I'm game.
You're game?
I'm game, yeah. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk. All right, I love it. Okay, so there's actually a total of 8 research tips that she talks about. And one of them, she says, the first one is, the more willing a husband is to do chores around the house, the more the wife is attracted to him.
Are you saying that I should do more chores around the house just right off the top?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, sure. I would agree with that point. I mean, that would go for both men and women. I would say. But yeah, the more you contribute in a household, in a relationship, the other person will find you more attractive, I would say, right?
Why do you think that?
Because it just shows that you're doing your fair share. You're contributing to your shared living space, and you're doing your part in making your living situation as best as possible.
I like that. I definitely think it's such a nice thing to come home and see things that are done that you didn't, like, say, like, 10 times, please pick up the shoes or whatever it is, or do dishes, and they're just done. And it's a nice way to create, like, a partnership.
As long as there's that unspoken understanding of what your responsibilities are around the house, then I think overall the relationship will be happy.
I know, and I think I was just thinking about how we had our close friends that were telling us about an article that they read, which talked about how certain couples decide to split up rooms in the house. So, for instance, someone owns the, like, kitchen, someone owns the bedroom, the other one owns living room, etc. And that way they kind of have equal division of labor and they know who's responsible for what, versus kind of just leaving it up in the air to just assume that whoever gets home first, for instance, will, right, like, clean up the living room.
Right.
But if you know, then it's like, it makes it very clear if I walk in and you take care of the living room and it's a mess, it's on you.
Totally. Yeah.
Versus before, I think when you leave it open-ended, it's very gray. It's a very gray space where it's like, well, we both have been working and I just got home 10 minutes before, you know?
Sure. And it kind of adds like a competitiveness to it, kind of. It's like, ooh, the living room's clean, but look at that bedroom. She hasn't cleaned for like 2 days, you know? And then you could just like look at her and go, man, look how nice this living room is. It's looking spotless today. But anyways, shouts out to our friends. They know who they are. It's been working at our house.
It has. It's been good. And I think it's one of those things of just having ownership over something and not just hoping that the other person will just do it when you're tired.
So to get back to the article,
yes.
Our next, one of her next points of what makes
a happy marriage.
Of a happy marriage. What was it? She said that couples that point out the positive in any situation. So what's an example of that? What did she say? Or what do you think she means?
I think one of the things that she says in there, it's like saying, even though our house burnt down, I mean, this is an extreme thing, but even though our house burnt down, you know, we still have each other and we're outside, you know, looking at the stars together.
Or, oh, our flights got delayed. It was horrible. We're 6 hours late, but hey, we're in Spain. Our life is good, you know, yeah, or whatever. There, people that always find the positive in situations naturally too are always better to hang out with, you know. It's a, we could all get pessimistic sometimes, I would say, some a little bit more than others. And there's nothing, I would think, more annoying than just someone that's complaining all the time, you know?
Right. And it's an energy thing.
Right.
Right. So if someone is just down all the time, then you're going to be down. And then what is there to be happy about?
Agreed. Agreed.
You know, it's one of those things where it's about positivity. It's about making sure that you both see the good in what is happening in your lives instead of being negative. You know, if you're always coming home and being like, I hate the world, it's never going to be like...
Totally. And I would say this, the point she makes here is, it's kind of like an obvious one. You know, it's kind of like her 8 points that we're going to go over, I would say, like, sure, obviously, you want to have a positive attitude towards or look at the positive side of anything. And I think it's valuable in a relationship because there's going to be days when your partner is down and it's up to you to bring that person back up. If they have a shitty day at work, if they have, you know, had a bad day at playing softball or a bad day giving a presentation. Or
the Warriors lose.
Or the Warriors lose. There's going to be some, you know, counseling needed. And it's up to your significant other to kind of bring you back up and bring that balance back. And I think it's super important.
Yeah, I think that's the best part, kind of moving in a positive light. So I agree. That's a very, like, I think that's a no-brainer. But she does have some other interesting ones. One, which I thought was kind of random but funny and interesting, is that the happiest marriages apparently have the wife that's thinner and better looking than the husband.
Well, we're safe there then.
Aw, that's sweet.
We're good with that. I concur.
I concur. Well, she makes the point that it's not saying that a woman has to be thin necessarily. She just has to be thinner than her husband. So if he's like 300 pounds and she's like 250, they're good.
Right, right, right. I think I saw the picture she had accompanying, or one of the pictures accompanying the article was like two big rhinoceroses right next to each other. And one rhinoceros was a little bit smaller than the other one and they were loving each other. So, but yeah, it's a funny point. Why do you think, yeah,
well, I think woman has to be skinnier? What she's saying is, I think something that we've talked about in like our previous episode is about how men are more visually into looks, and they just, they're more visual, and maybe for them it's just, I don't know, more appealing for them to have someone
that's we're there. More sexual beings, I guess. Not all men. Some women are just as sexual or more sexual than men, but yeah, as a whole, I would say we're a little more vain, we're a little more, looks mean more than everything else, which is sad sometimes, but you know, true, it's okay, we're guys, you know, we tend to look at the beautiful girls more than the girls notice the beautiful, I don't know, girls notice the beautiful guys too, but,
yeah, we've talked about this, how like girls are really okay with dating a guy that's awkward looking, but is like hilarious or really smart,
where you won't see often the guy with the unattractive girl just because she's hilarious.
Right.
Yeah.
That's not as common. Right. And maybe that's what this point is making. But I just thought that was interesting because you wouldn't think that. But I do love that she made a shout out to being like, you don't have to be the thinnest girl. You just have to be thinner than your husband. So like feed them a lot of cake.
Right.
So start baking cakes, ladies.
Well, her next point, which I think is hilarious, is watching a romantic comedy causes relationship happiness to plummet. Boom. Love that.
You've always said that.
You don't watch romantic comedies with your significant other. And go ahead. Why do you think that?
Well, you've actually said that to me before, and you don't like watching them. They're not like my favorite movies, but I definitely love like on a rainy day when it's cold outside to have some hot chocolate watching the stuff. I don't know. I like, makes me happy. I disagree with this. I actually am happy after I watch them. I think there is something about seeing other people be happy that makes me happy.
Well, so the thing is that the thing with romantic comedies is that you're seeing these relationships that are completely fake played out, and you project yourself on these unrealistic situations and storybook endings and guys running down airplane terminals with a dozen roses chasing you as you're about to move away, and it's just, it's unrealistic. So it's not as real. It's not these fairy tales. And if you think your life's going to be a fairy tale and you're always waiting for that fairy tale, then you're going to miss a very real opportunity.
Well, that is very true. I, on the other hand, find myself very happy after watching them. Like, even if these people end up, you know, I don't know, having this, like, crazy life that I know I may never have, I'm not like, oh, no, I'm so sad, I hate my husband. I'm just like, oh, that was, like, a fun way to spend.
But come on, if you're watching The Notebook and then you're looking at Ryan Gosling glistening in the rain, and then you look over and you see your significant other fiddling on his phone with Chinese food stains on his shirt, you're going to be like, oh, man, I need an upgrade bad. So it's, I think romantic comedies are poison to relationships, and you're better off watching a horror movie or an action movie or some, like, depressing, like, crazy, life-changing drama where you look at each other afterwards and you're like, God, we got it good. You know, we didn't have to that brain transfer and, like, new eyes implemented because of that tragic car accident. And, yeah, those are the movies that you should watch to keep the relationship strong.
That is so funny because I think you can learn something from watching these movies, right? Like, the way, how are they happy? They, you know, do things together or talk about relationship problems. I think you can gain a lot from it. I think there's, like, a positive spin to it. But again, it's like, what type of person are you? It will just depend. Are you the type of person that's, like, a pessimist, or are you the type of person that's an optimist?
Sure. I mean, some people but I just agree with her point that people that are infatuated with romantic comedies are setting themselves up for failure and disappointment in real life relationship situations by projecting those assumptions.
Well, yeah, someone can make a case that if all you watch is that and all you know is that, and then you go on a date and it's not like that perfect date that you saw in 16 Candles, because that's what I did. I watched 16 Candles. Her name is Sam. And I was like, that is happening when I turn 16. Jake is coming in a red car. No, like, for sure happening.
Stereo outside of the window and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, That was what I thought. But when it didn't happen, when I turned 16 and there was no car outside the window, I was like, what is happening? Instead,
you probably got some nervous kid in braces or something, like, asking you in the hallways outside of social studies class, like, if he wants to go to the dance with you. Well, we'll move on from that.
But, you know, then you have these ideas of what it might be, like, just like that. And when they don't live up to it, then you don't give certain people chances.
So, I agree with that. What's next? What does she got next for us?
Well, another one that I like is people who smile in childhood photos apparently have higher chance of having their relationship work. That one's a bit random, but I think what she was saying was more not, you know, back in the day when there wasn't digital cameras and there wasn't 500 pictures of your children. And your parents were only taking these, like, random moment photos. If you're smiling in them, apparently it's been linked to having a happy marriage. Which, there's, like, probably 10 baby pictures of me out there. So, I mean, I don't even know if I'm smiling.
Well, it just said childhood photos. So, I mean, you know, that's 1 through 12 years old. And it's in, yeah, I don't think that it will apply to today's society because there's like 20 million selfies and everything is documented, but it's funny. So people that smile more in their child, I think it just shows an innate identification of that person's personality. If they're smiling naturally in photos, that means they're just an overall happy person. Again, going back to her other point, like being an optimist and not a pessimist and like, you know, on the flip side, if you look at, I think, you know, one of those clickbait things on the internet when you're on Facebook scrolling down and it's like, look at these pictures of kids that turned out to be serial killers. And they're like scary looking weird kids like staring in the corner, like looking psycho from the start. So I guess I could put a little bit of weight into what she's saying with the kids who smile are more likely to be in stronger relationships. I don't know, because maybe they're just happier.
Yeah, they're just innately, like you were saying, happy kids. And therefore, you know, that translates into their relationships and their lives. Like, they're out there looking for love. They're definitely not out there plotting some crazy plan.
But her next point was hilarious. So, to have a successful marriage or relationship, do not win an Oscar. Do not win an Academy Award. Mostly for acting, or if you're going to be an actress, because that's the percentages of actors and actresses that are divorced is like through the roof. It's crazy. Like if you look at all the people that have won Best Actor or Best Actress in like the last 20 years, it's like, I don't know, like over 80 some percent, 90%.
Mark just made that up.
I did. Sounds good though. I bet I'm really close with that number.
Well, no, she brought some examples out like Halle Berry, What was it? Reese Witherspoon, Swank, what's her last name?
Hillary Swank.
Like, they all won an Oscar and shortly after were divorced. She didn't go into details of why this is, but what do you think it is?
Well, I think it just applies to, it's just a quick way to identify fame in general. It's like, don't date the musician, you know, don't date the successful musician that's about to go on tour. Don't date the artist whose art gallery just got picked up to go around the world. Or, you know, it's like, I think it's just a way of identifying that, like, fame, whether you're a basketball player or an artist or a musician or whatever, fame will take away from a relationship. And it's just a sad reality of it that person's craft becomes so big that
There's no
time for the relationship. And there's a little bit of relationship envy or whatever.
That's hard because it's like, you know, I think of these relationships. Wasn't it Sean Penn was like married to his wife for like 20-something years and he won the Oscar. And then the next year they were divorced.
That was weird. That was crazy. Because otherwise he would have been like a successful example of somebody that's been with his wife for a long time. And I don't know. That just happened to be a weird coincidence, I think.
No, it's not. It's playing into this exact thing.
But he was famous. Like, even before, like, Sean Penn winning an Oscar was not, like, him being more recognized. Like, even before he won an Oscar, he was still Sean Penn.
Right, but somehow the Oscar becomes like the all end all be all, sure. Whatever.
Sure. Next thing you know, you're interviewing a Mexican drug lord, and you know, being made fun of by the journalism community, and everybody's scratching your head, going, "Damn, what happened to that Sean Penn?
He won an Oscar. That's what happened."
Exactly. Oh, poor Sean.
But there is something to that, which is interesting, because while we're talking about this, like, what happens with, you know, when someone becomes a president? You don't see divorce rates after that.
It depends on the type of, you know, I mean, politics is different. Politics, a divorce hurts you. Whereas in a fame situation, a divorce doesn't really matter. You know, you're thinking about, you're in that vain me world of being famous and in the public eye, that it's like the public decides kind of who you're going to be with or who you want to be with. And it's sad. It's like, oh, this person's dating this person. And like the public weighs in on whether they approve of it or not, you know? And that kind of alters your perception of like, oh, they should be together or they shouldn't be together.
So basically you're saying like society puts this on us because society's making the president be with his wife.
Meanwhile, right? Claire Underwood is, you know, like if she knows all the bad things with her husband, she's like, we're not getting a divorce because I need to be president.
I think you should say who Claire Underwood is.
Well, I mean, come on. We all know.
Not everyone knows about House of Cards.
Oh, I thought you thought I was talking about Hillary with a metaphor. You thought I was really talking about Claire Underwood. That's funny. But come on, everybody knows who Claire Underwood is.
No, I know a lot of people that don't watch that show, which is like, that could be a whole episode in itself, studying the relationship of House of Cards.
So what's the next point she got for us?
So we have drinking alcohol is bad for your marriage.
Duh. But come on, who pays attention to that?
But see, this isn't saying being an alcoholic is bad for your marriage. This is just saying drinking alcohol is.
Well, I think, but it's implying that alcoholism is bad for a relationship.
She's not saying alcoholism. There's a difference. It's just drinking in general.
I say that we completely disregard this tip and just keep it in our back pockets.
No, but it's actually really interesting. I think it's just because, is it because people become a different person? Like, what do you think it might be there? Because she really did skip through this one.
Well, she did. It was funny.
She was like, yeah, whatever. Moving on.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that she's just going off of percentages and research studies. And I think practically when you're seeing how alcohol affects a relationship, it's most likely for the negative. It's not like, oh, these people create the coolest sculptures on earth when they get blacked out drunk together. You know, no, it's more like Ray Rice and elevators and things like that, you know?
Like you lose your cool, your control.
Yeah, exactly. You spend gamble money away in the casino.
$600 are gone from your account.
Exactly. You never know. And like
you just
end
don't
up
know
on
what
a
happened.
You don't know what happened. You're on a bender in the town, and your wife fell asleep in the hotel room, and she wakes up in the morning, and is like, "What happened?"
But some people will argue that, you know, when they drink together, I mean, when it's not excessive, you have adventures together.
Sure.
And that actually could be really fun.
I mean, it's all about a balance, right? If you drink. Drink moderately. Drink responsibly. And, you know, if you find that alcohol, it causes you to fight and you guys are always getting in arguments when you guys are drunk, maybe you guys shouldn't drink together. You know,
yeah.
Save it for when you're out with the girls on a wine night, or save it for when you're with the boys watching a game. And yeah, it's a volatile drug, so it could, you know, it brings emotions and truths to the surface and makes you act in ways that you normally wouldn't act, and makes people not actually be who they are. You know,
yeah, it's not the person you love.
Right, exactly.
So it
exactly.
takes away from that. Okay.
But, you know, some couples party together, and they know how to compliment each other when they're drinking, and they know when to take care of each other when the other person's going to be sleepy.
AKA me. Because you're never sleepy.
Or when the other one's acting like a child and needs to be put to bed. Or
AKA Mark.
or needs to stay out of the refrigerator.
And not, like, walk into a kitchen and then just see food everywhere.
That wasn't me. That was that gremlin, I'm telling you. I don't know. I swear. That guy comes out at night.
I know. Sometimes I'm just like, where does it go during the day?
I don't know. I don't know what happened in the kitchen that night. I have no clue.
But I do agree. Some couples just, they have that balance, but, and others don't. And that's okay. I guess you just have to know what works for you.
It's about recognizing. Yeah. It's about recognizing what is affecting your relationship and what's not. But I think it's kind of an obvious one, but it's one that maybe you would kind of put to the side. But anyways, what's next? What do we got next?
You have the next one.
Oh, I got the next one. Oh, is it the last one? So this is interesting. This is kind of makes sense. So divorce is contagious. So be careful. If your close couple friends you see starting to end up in divorce, it increases the likelihood of your marriage by 75%. So it jumps from 50% to 75% that you will also get a divorce.
Wow. That was shocking to me.
That's crazy. It's scary.
That's really scary.
But it kind of, and you know, it makes sense. You see, if your good couple friends get a divorce, if they're your really good couple friends, then you kind of end up choosing sides or whatever, and you're like listening to this person's story, and it's just like, I don't know, like kind of maybe pitch you if against the other person a little bit or something like that. Or,
well, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we have a lot of couple friends that we go out and we have great dinners and great time together, and we do so many things together. And I know even couples that take trips together all the time. And when that like dynamic ends, it kind of puts a damper on your relationship, and you start to wonder like, oh, you know, I don't know, he's off dating the 20-year-old now. I wonder what that must be like. And, you know, like it just puts ideas in your head, and it also changes the dynamic that was like so great at one point.
Sure, sure, sure. Dom Draper is looking at Roger Sterling going, wow, maybe I should cheat on my wife too. Roger seems like he's got it together. Meanwhile, Roger's a complete, I'm talking about Mad Men here, people, obviously. I'll always bring it back to TV.
You will.
When in doubt. But yeah, you know, it's grass is always greener on the other side, I guess. And when you see maybe a friend get divorced and they think that they could be completely depressed in reality, but they project this like, oh, getting divorced was the best idea I had. I'm living free now. And, you know, times are great.
I know.
And then it puts that seed in your head that maybe your relationship isn't great.
And because they were so close to you. You know, I think you might have friends that aren't as close and you might not see them all the time and they get divorced, and that could be like a different dynamic. But I think it's really saying like close friends, that maybe you guys probably got married around the same time, had kids around the same time. All those things that kind of align your lives in a way.
Well, what I think is the toughest is when you're such close friends that all your other friends you kind of like lose friends because the other one goes away. Like, so say there's people that you only see because of that significant other. Like, so say, Greg and Cindy, you know, like, oh, we hang out with Greg and Cindy all the time. They get a divorce, but we don't see, Cindy's friend, Thomas anymore. And we love Thomas, but because they got a divorce, we don't see Thomas anymore. And it's like, great. Way to blow up for all of us, you know?
I know. And it, again, going back to changing something that seemed to be working.
Yeah.
And it just puts a damper on everyone's relationship. But the fact that it jumps up to 75% is insane.
That's crazy.
That's insane. That just makes us...
It's 3 out of 4.
Yeah. There you go, doing math.
I mean...
Wow.
Dude, one time. Dude, I could do it sometimes.
3 out of 4.
3 out of 4. You hear that?
Are you sure about that?
That was quick.
Wow, I'm impressed.
You know, I just pulled it right out. No graphs or anything. Didn't need that part of math class.
I didn't see that coming. I was like, whoa, you know that?
Leave me alone. But so, okay, babe. So with, you know, 75%, like it jumps away, like 50% of all people get divorced, you end up... promising your whole life to marry this one person through thick and thin till death do you part. You'll only have sex with that one person, and all these negative things that get situated with marriage. What are the positives? Why get married?
Right. And she does. She goes into that because I think, you know, some of these could leave you like, why would I even want this? And she talks about one is married couples. I think what she's really saying individually end up making more money.
So married couples make more money.
Yes.
That makes sense to me, right? You're a team. You're two people. You're not just one.
Right. But, of course. But more so that I think it has to do with the fact that you have someone kind of supporting you and there and making you, you know, do better. You know, they want better for you. You want better for them. You both support each other. You come home every night now to someone that's like, hey, you know, I thought you really wanted to write, or I thought you really wanted to work on this project. Let me support you. Let's make it work.
Totally.
So
totally.
I think that probably
not only that, but then the obvious practical, the very normal thing is that tax breaks. There's what, 1,000 or so different ways that a marriage will help you during like tax time, or the government benefits from being married. So, I mean, there's an incentive to be
married.
Sometimes
I think you're the one making up stats. You say I make up stats.
Dude, I bet it's around 1,000, man. I really do. I bet it's totally, you know, I bet there's a bunch of tax breaks and I bet there's like special deals and it's like marriage it helps you. All my freelance people know us up, man.
No, but that's another thing. You're right. In certain situations, although other people will make a case that maybe marriage is not tax benefit, depending on how much you make together collectively, you will get money back. So in a way, yes, you are making more money as a married couple. So that's a big positive for people.
So the next thing on why getting married is more positive is that more married couples are statistically to be healthier physically and emotionally.
And that makes sense. I think that I've seen a lot of couples, I know a lot of couples where one person was, let's say, a lot more health conscious, a lot more into working out or whatever it is, and the other person wasn't necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, I got a juicer in my fridge right now. Like, in my pantry. Like, what? What is a juicer? You know, like I. But
well,
I
you
use
thought
that.
It went in the fridge, so yeah. apparently you're not really.
But there's like healthy alternatives out there I didn't even know about. So.
Well, yeah, I think it's for us, and a good example in that is I'm a huge fruit lover. And you're a big
I'm a vegetable guy, and I make you eat those veggies.
And I make you eat those fruit.
Oh, you should see your guys. Yeah, so like when she eats how that like 12-year-old did in middle school when they would only eat like, you know, the three compartments of the Lunchable and leave that last little corner, that last part of the Lunchable till the very end. That's how Samantha is with her veggies. So she'll eat like, you know, the main course, the rice or the potatoes, and then there's just a big pile of veggies on her plate at the end of the dinner.
But in a way, that we make each other healthier, you know.
We
you
do.
You might be mocking my anti-love
hey,
for vegetables.
I eat fruit because of you. You eat the you eat veggies because of me.
Yeah. So in a way, that's really an important thing.
And honestly, when it comes to working out, anybody that works out could tell you that, you know, working out in partners is the most efficient way. Like you have a workout partner or you have a trainer or you have somebody to help push you. So a lot of married couples will take up running together or do marathons or like, you know, Samantha on the weekend when I'm trying to sleep in, she'll be like, let's go to the gym, you know? And it's like, can't say no. And we're like, you can't say no. But then she's like, I really think you should go to the gym. And it's like, you should. So you end up, you go to the gym together. So
well, yeah. And I mean, from a physical standpoint, it also releases endorphins, which makes you happier. So overall, just all tie in together.
And obviously, emotional health, when you have that person to talk to, you're not, you basically have your own therapist that helps you through things. The person, your best friend that knows you most, you're able to just talk things through, understand yourself better, understand your problems and challenges better, and you approach things together. And
you're not like going at it alone.
You're
you
not
know?
Going at it alone. Yeah. And you're not just having that internal struggle of what you should do or how you should feel a certain way about this, or you kind of just have that support.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. What was the other one? Apparently, studies show that married couples have more sex than their single counterparts.
Of course. I mean, come on. Our single counterparts, you know, it might look like they're having their great single life on Tinder and all that stuff, but our married friends know out there that, you know, come on. They might act like they're having all this sex.
Well, yeah, I think that people just have this impression of, you know, people that have been married 30 years. You know, what is their sex life to their single counterpart? Is it, you know, would it be the same? Or, you know,
well, 30 years from now, babe, I would be 50, whatever, and so would you. So it's like our 50-year-old friends at the time are not having as much, the single ones are not having as much sex as the 50-year-old married people. Because they actually still have the people that love them every day that are in bed together, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I would guess.
I know, but I don't know if I would have guessed that right off the bat. I would think that, you know, single people are definitely, you know, they're out there. They're trying to find that person, so they might be going through a lot of people.
Yeah, they're going through a lot of rejection, but they make it look real good on Instagram.
What was the last one?
So the last one is that married people live longer. That makes sense to me.
It ties back to being healthier.
Ties back to mental, physical health. It ties back to, yeah, just overall mental stability. All those things pretty much relate to helping you live longer and a more satisfied life, I would say.
I think that whether you're in a marriage or you're looking for someone, I think it is something worth protecting. I think marriage is really important, and apparently it has many great benefits.
It's got bad odds, you know, 50%, whatever, that jumps up to 50 to 75, but I agree. I think it's an institution worth protecting. That's just what she says in the TED Talk, too.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think she's trying to make the case with all these points. It's like, be conscious of these things to make your marriage work. You know, as much as I want you to win an Oscar, because I do.
I want to win an Oscar. I'm not an actor or actress, though. So
no,
the stats are different for behind the camera.
Maybe behind the camera. Let's hope. We should do research.
Yeah, and I don't know if I necessarily think we should stop drinking together, because we have fun.
Yeah. But yeah. Maybe we can only have, like, 3 drinks.
Right, exactly. But, and I don't know about the whole, like, pictures of, I think we're both smiling in our kid pictures, right? Smiling a lot in mine.
You've always smiled, so I would be shocked if you weren't.
And I know I've seen some pictures of you, and you're smiling ear to ear, so I think we're okay on that front.
I think the smiles we got covered. Check, check.
Check, check there. And then, obviously, you know, we're enjoying a little bit of the joint tax return action right now, so, you know, we got that going for ourselves,
too. Oh, the more money?
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess, like, do I have to give up romantic comedies?
I mean, I could go on for the rest of my life without a romantic comedy.
I don't think I can. I don't know if I'm going to give that up. I'm not sold on that one at all. I'm going to say no to that one.
I think that's a rule.
Maybe we don't watch it together.
There we go. There we go.
I'm sure you're very happy about that.
Signed and dotted right there. We have recorded evidence. She is in agreement. I think this is legally binding.
It's legally binding, for sure.
It's legally binding. I do not have to watch romantic comedies from this day forward. Perfect. For the benefit of our marriage.
And then should I just keep feeding you, like, cupcakes and chocolate at night?
I'm completely okay with this. This is for the benefit of our marriage. Just work in some fruit now and then.
Yeah, but
it's all right. You got to help me work out and then feed me cupcakes, too, at the same time.
Right. We just got to balance it out. Not too many cupcakes, but not too little cupcakes.
Right. You can't have me getting in too good of shape.
Oh, no. We can't. Well, you just can't go under my weight, basically.
Right. Although I've been hitting that treadmill lately, dude. I'm telling you, I could probably run 2 miles faster than you. No problem.
Oh, God, not this again. Please, I will school you on running.
I don't know about that. I mean, so what about swimming?
Oh, God, no. I thought I was a good swimmer, and that is a joke.
Okay, I'll give you running. I'll take swimming.
Okay, yes, I agree.
I'll beat you in that all day.
I know. I was impressed. I definitely have a different perception of what I...
Somebody lost a bet for a shot of tequila about that one real recently in Cabo.
We were combining health and drinking. Wait, one positive, one negative. Oh, okay, never mind.
See, I think we got the hang of this thing.
Canceled each other.
Exactly. I think we got the hang of these points. And I think, yeah.
I think it was a really interesting TED Talk. I think it's funny. You know, those obscure points that are out there of what makes a happy marriage. But really, I think in the end, it's probably what works for you and your relationship and If you're two pessimistic people that love that, then that works for you.
And if you happen to have those friends that are going through a tough time and might be heading for a divorce, that doesn't mean that you're going to be divorced.
No, not at all. These are all just, again, statistics, not that everyone falls into them.
And, you know, identifying the risk factors around you and just seeing what makes your relationship happy. And it's just, you know, if either of you feel like you're being down and complaining a lot about something, it's your significant other's job to help bring them back up, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a really good one. I had fun doing this. Thank you.
No problem. Let me know. So somebody must have bailed, huh? That's the only reason why you pulled me out of the cupboard.
Maybe.
Well, it was fun. I'll come on whenever you need me to.
Cool. I think the audience likes you. I think, you know, you're just like, this is like second nature to you.
Well, you know, as long as I don't win the Oscar, I guess.
No, but we want you to. Yeah. So I'm going against it. Yeah. I'm going against it, people.
Oscar and cocktails.
Yep. I love it.
And on that note, that wraps up this week's episode of Status Complicated. Thanks for listening. Hope that this episode was somewhat enlightening or at the very least entertaining. And I know some of these steps on how to make a marriage work are a bit wacky, but hopefully you got some good points and you'll listen to us next time. Thanks.